the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
The pandemic has certainly changed much of American life, the way we travel, the way we shop, and what we do with our free time. But what about the longer-term issue, retirement? Joining me on the program is Professor Alicia Monell from Boston College. She heads up the Center for Retirement Research. Professor, we were just talking briefly before we went on the air, but let's talk about the impact that the pandemic is having on the Social Security system. Now, the trustees have said that the system is sound to 2035. I've heard with the pandemic, it's sound to 2033 and as pessimistic as 2029. I'd like to get your views on this.
Social Security financing is interesting. There basically is a cost line and a revenue line. And the cost line is higher than the revenue line. And we've always known it was going to be because the baby boom has been retiring and that drives up costs and our payroll taxes have been pretty much flat. In the short term, the difference between the two is made up by using up the Social Security Trust Fund. And so the question of when that trust fund is exhausted is an important one. Just for your viewers, I want to emphasize when the trust fund is exhausted, it doesn't mean the program goes to zero. It means that payroll taxes only will cover 75% of benefits. And so the exhaustion of that trust fund in the 2020 trustees report that Social Security put out was in 2035. And they acknowledged that their numbers came out, were done before they took COVID-19 into account. And so the real way that the pandemic will affect the financing is by shifting that date when that date is exhausted, whether it's 2033 or 2034 or 2031. In my view, it doesn't make that much difference. It's very close, and we should have done something about it before the pandemic hit. And we're going to have to do something about it once we get out of this mess. And the fact that it's 1 or 2 years earlier really doesn't change the basic story. Social Security has a long-run financing problem. It's the backbone of our retirement system. It needs more money to be able to pay promised benefits.
Now, what about the impact of high unemployment for retirement? You know, it's been said that Americans don't save enough. I guess the one positive thing right now is the market has been going up. But what about long-term retirement savings?
So we put out something called the National Retirement Risk Index, which estimates the percent of today's working households that will not be able to maintain their standard of living in retirement. That index says that about half of today's working households are at risk. So there, we have an inadequate retirement system. A lot of it's due to the fact that the employer-provided part only covers half the private sector workforce. And so people do need to have more money for retirement. And I think the major thing that needs to be done is to close the coverage gap. In terms of investments, you know, if I knew the answer there, I'd be out on my yacht, not talking on the radio. And so we have very low rates of return on fixed income investments. The stock market keeps going up. I don't really understand why, but that's a fortunate thing for people trying to save for retirement. But it's really hard to figure out what you should do with your money, because to get any kind of return involves taking more risk. Some risk is sensible. A lot of risk becomes increasingly less sensible as people get older.
You know, one of the trends that we've seen in our own practice, of course, we're in California where the price of real estate is very expensive. But I would say, Professor, about 40% of our clients are choosing to sell the big home here in California when they retire. And they're looking at other states where the cost of living is cheaper. For example, Nevada, Arizona, some in Texas, some in Idaho. What about this trend as Americans look and cope with, let's say, lower rates of return on safe investments, less money in savings because we no longer have defined benefit pension plans the way we used to. What about migration?
So I think you bring up a really important point. I'm a great fan of the house as a retirement asset and something that I think people should be tapping and will increasingly need to tap to make ends meet once they stop working. The fact that people are actually doing that is surprising to me, because it's something that people, I think financial planners and people like me recommend that you think about using your home equity to support yourself. And one of the most straightforward ways of doing that is selling your big house and buying a smaller, cheaper house. Unfortunately, what we do here in the East is we sell the house in the suburbs, but then go buy a condominium in the city, which costs, it's smaller, yes, but it costs just as much. So people really aren't taking much money out. And historically, people haven't really taken money out of their home equity. But it's a great trend if that's what's happening.
And as you take a look at the cost of housing, I'm sure where you're at, in Massachusetts, the East Coast, New York, real estate is very expensive, like it is on the West Coast. So this migration, you know, I've seen, they tell me that people on the East Coast tend to go to Florida, where there's no taxes and the cost of living is cheaper, the weather is warmer. People in California, you know, they're going to places where it's hotter, Texas, Nevada, Arizona.
Yes, so I think a lot of people in Massachusetts go, or not a lot of people, some people in Massachusetts go to Florida. There's, I think what they're after is the absence of an inheritance tax or estate tax. And so it's attractive, and it's, but it is hotter. The main thing is that the house, people save for retirement through two ways, one or three ways, I guess. Their Social Security contributions ensure they get some basic retirement income. They participate generally in, or half of them participate in 401k plans, and the money is automatically deducted from their paycheck and goes into those accounts. And then the third way they save for retirement is by paying down their mortgage and actually ending up with home equity. And so I think that broadening the discussion so that when people think about their retirement assets, they think about the equity they have in their house as a way of supporting themselves, that's really a positive development.
You know, one issue that we've used on the planning front is if we take a look at, let's say, retirement projections. A lot of our clients are choosing to work part-time, sometimes maybe doing consulting or maybe doing something totally different than what they did during their working career, but working part-time to supplement their retirement income. Do you see this as a trend that will accelerate in a period, for example, where we're seeing, let's say, lower rates of return on investment, and then also where there hasn't been adequate savings to really put you in a good situation when you retire?
So I think this is another really important area to talk about, because working longer is probably the most powerful tool people have at their own disposal to affect their retirement security. And one of the main reasons, I think, for working longer is to delay as long as possible claiming Social Security benefits. As you well know, benefits claimed at age 70 or monthly benefits are 76% higher than those claimed at 62. And Social Security income is so helpful in the sense that it lasts as long as people live and it's adjusted for inflation. So the more you can get of that, the better. And if you can postpone till 70, that's great. And working part-time, if that helps, plus using maybe some of your 401k assets, I think that's the way to set yourself up for the best possible outcome.
Yeah, I would say Social Security for many people in the private sector has become even more important, because most people, if they're working in the private sector, have something called a 401k. And basically, that doesn't guarantee you anything. Whatever you save, whatever it grows to, is what you're going to have. compared to a defined benefit, where Social Security is very much like a defined benefit. You work, you get so much that you've paid into the system. And as you just mentioned, the longer you can delay taking it, it grows at 8% a year versus full retirement age. This is becoming more important, in my opinion.
Oh, it's always been the backbone, but it is more important in the sense that the private sector 401k plans, I think, are good for sort of the upper middle class and for wealthy people. You look at people in the middle of the income distribution, and they really have less and less in 401k balances over time, even though they will have spent more time under a 401k system than earlier cohorts. And so everybody needs some supplement to Social Security. It is never was intended to be the only source of people's retirement income, but it is the backbone of our system right now. And going back to where we started this conversation, it needs to have a fix in the sense that it has a long run deficit, and the exhaustion of the trust fund, it just highlights that fact that fix needs to be done sooner rather than later.
Professor, do you see any kind of legislation coming down the road where, let's say, Congress encourages more and more companies to put some kind of pension plan in that covers workers or allows workers to put money aside and save for retirement? In other words, supplement what they've gotten from Social Security or what they might build up in the equity in the home.
So that's what has to happen. We need to have a system where everybody can save at work in some way or another. So we need to have universal coverage. We need everyone to have a workplace retirement plan. I don't think the notion of just encouraging people to do that will work. I think that we need to have a mandate that says you need to either set up a plan or automatically put some of your employees' money into a 401k or an individual retirement account. There are experiments going on, in California, in Oregon, in Illinois, where the employers who do not offer a plan to their employees are required to automatically put aside some money into an individual retirement account. These are just getting up on their feet, and it'll be interesting to see the extent to which they provide adequate resources for people who would otherwise only have Social Security.
And what about the idea of some kind of education program? Because, you know, we all know over a longer period of time, the stock market has done much better than, let's say, fixed income. But if you're not real familiar and you go through what we saw at the beginning of this year, where the market lost a lot, almost 40% in a period of 3 weeks, sometimes that scares people. And also, even during retirement, you have to have some kind of inflation hedge, given the fact that people are living longer.
Right. So, I mean, the good thing about Social Security, just to go back to that, is that does keep up with inflation. So at least your base amount keeps up. And I work for an educational institution, and so I shouldn't come out negatively in terms of education, but I view that today's working people are so busy and have both spouses are probably working. They've got kids they're worried about. So they've got a lot on their mind, and they shouldn't have to be financial experts. And so I really think that things like target date funds in 401k plans, which automatically change the amount that you have and reduce the amount you have in stocks and increase the amount you have in bonds as you age, is very helpful things that means that people will automatically be rebalancing without having to think about it. The other thing is that, you know, you're right, you need some equities, take some risks, even at once you reach 65, because it's not like you spend your whole pile the day of your 65th birthday, but you probably have another 20, 30 years over which you're going to consume your savings. So it does require taking some risks in retirement as well as during the accumulation phase.
So as we begin to close here, I want to get some ideas from you. We know that down the road, we're going to have to do something to fix Social Security. I mean, sooner or later, something has to be done. What do you think would fix the system? What do we need to do now to make sure that 10, 20, 30 years from now, the system is sound for anybody retiring?
So this is not rocket science. It's a system that has money coming in and money going out. And we have promised more money going out than we have money coming in. One might say, well, why don't we cut benefits a little bit and increase revenues some? And that sounds so fair, but I don't think that's the right answer this time around. I think that given the lack of real protection outside of Social Security, that the changes should be made on the revenue side, that we should keep promised benefits as they are and put in more money. There's no manna from heaven. It has to be done, it means raising taxes in some form or another to cover promised benefits. And there are lots of ways to do it. You can increase the payroll tax, you can increase the rate, you can increase the base. My favorite thing is so complicated that I think people will turn off if I mention it, but I'll just do it briefly, is that our Social Security system is more expensive than it would have to be if we had had a trust fund accumulating from the beginning of the program. But we essentially gave away that trust fund to early generations, which was probably a wise thing to do. So we have to raise money not only to pay for the contribution, but also for the interest. And so I would try to shift off the worker the burden that you can attribute to this legacy cost. And that too would have to be funded somewhere else, maybe the income tax. But so I think the changes have to be made on the revenue side. We could have a long conversation about what to change on the revenue side, but I'm convinced that people need at least this level of benefits if they have to have any sense of security in retirement.
I kind of like your idea of a trust fund, because if you take a look at countries like Canada, they actually do have a trust fund.
Yeah. I'm not sure we want to have a trust fund now, but the fact that we have given it away has made this system expensive. And to the extent that the system is expensive because we made a societal decision decades ago, I think that burden should be shifted to the population as a whole, not just to today's workers.
So as we close, Professor, if somebody really wanted to plan for retirement or study their retirement and take steps now, can you recommend either your own site or a place that they can go to become more informed?
If you are work for an employer that offers a plan, join that plan, a 401k plan. Contribute up to at least so you get the full match. Do not take your money out when you move from one employer to another. And basically think that your mortgage payment is another way to save. So, just you've got your Social Security. If you have an employer plan, that's good. Your house is another way to accumulate. And work as long as you can. If you can work till 70, that is a goal that will ensure that you are secure once you stop working.
All right. Well, listen, Professor, keep up the great work. Thanks for coming on the program. Stay safe and healthy.
Okay. Thank you very much. Take care.
That concludes my interview with Professor Monell. She brings up a couple important points. There's three ways that you save for retirement. One is you contribute to, let's say, a pension plan at work. Second is Social Security. And third is the equity in your home. But she brought up a couple of key things. Number one is life expectancy has increased for all of us that head into retirement. If you retire at age 65, you could probably live another 20, 25 years between husband and wife. So you have to plan on your funds lasting for a longer period of time. And one way to take advantage of that, as the professor pointed out, is delay taking Social Security benefits. For most people, that's going to be age 66. But if you defer that, it goes up 8% a year. I don't know anything you can do on the investment place that would give you an 8% guaranteed return. So, you know, deferring your Social Security to age 70 and also staying in the workforce. So there's a lot of ways that you can enhance your retirement. I hope some of these ideas will help you benefit. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.